On this week's episode of the We Don't Know Either podcast, Lindsay, Michael, and myself are joined by the Director of Operations of Bridgetown Trivia from Portland, Oregon, Mr. Brian Collins. This is our second week of recording from self-isolation, and we wanted to thank all of the people who reached out this week with the kind words of thanks that we started recording again. To all of you listening, I'll say the same thing I told everyone who wrote an email. Doing the show is easy because it's fun. We're glad it brings a little positivity in the world, and we're happy to be back. I've been asked if we have a Patreon account or where people can donate money to our cause, and good news, I have two great things for you. Number one, if you're itching for your trivia fix, we're hosting two live games every night on our Facebook page at facebook.com/wedontknoweitherlive. A lot of your local hosts will be streaming our games directly to the people. If you can, show them some support by donating to them. And if that isn't enough to scratch your trivia itch, you can support us and the company directly by buying our book, We Don't Know Either, Trivia Night Done Right, available at Amazon or wherever great books are sold. Enjoy the show.
Hello, everybody, and welcome in to episode number 370 of the We Don't Know Either podcast. I'm Lindsay.
I'm Nick.
I'm Michael.
I'm Brian.
Brian, welcome. How are you doing out in Portland, Oregon?
Getting by, all circumstances taken into account. So
awesome. West Coast. We got two West Coasters, two East Coasters on today's episode. We're spanning the coast of the country. Yeah. So Brian, why don't you kick us off with your interesting fact since it's your first time back on the show in a while?
Oh, no pressure. No pressure at all. Yeah. I say it's been since September since the last time I was on. So, just so everybody knows, a big shout out to Bridgetown Trivia here on the West Coast. I am the Director of Operations out here, and I have not been on the podcast since we started this format, and this is my first shot at it. So I'm going to open up with a real big meta example of talking about trivia on a trivia podcast. So my question is as follows. I mentioned this earlier to some of my fellow podcasters. Does anybody know about the quote-unquote largest trivia event in the United States? And two of you were on, and I got a general consensus. They think they know what I'm talking about. Says, do you guys know what I'm referring to? Do you know what state it's in?
Yeah,
like, I think you guys had mentioned.
Yeah, we had said it's the one at in Minnesota.
Yes, there is a massive trivia competition that takes place in Minnesota every year. It has been going something like 50 years strong. It's put on by a radio station locally. And my question is, how many hours does the largest trivia game in the United States go consecutively?
Oh, so how long, okay, if I'm a player, how long do I expect to keep my butt in the seat is what you're asking?
Yes, from question one to question last, how long does this game take place?
Oh, man. Well, I don't even know. There's so many questions I have as to what their format is and who's running it and how many teams are there, or is it an individual contest? I have a lot of follow-up questions, none of which would figure into my math as per usual, sure. But I have all those questions.
Okay, so it's put on by a local college station, 90 FM, and it is in Stevens Point, Wisconsin. And it is a team event. Recently, they've gotten to the point where, since it's all broadcast over the radio, it's open book. You can use the internet. So that has resulted in some changes in the nature of the way people play. Apparently, some number of teams play from, at this point, using internet technology, very much so like we are doing for this podcast. They gather in large groups, and so they will take shifts in playing the game. And the largest team, if I recall correctly, is something like 150 players that shift in and out as time goes by. So,
oh my man, I'm just thinking about how hard it is to just narrow down a decision with five people or four people. I can't imagine finalizing an answer with 150 people. Just getting any amount of people to agree on anything is an impossibility.
So I've actually participated in this. I have never put together a team, but I have been asked to be on a team as a minor piece, and I was actually not available at the time. But they said, that's cool. It's just, we'll throw you something, and if you can knock it out of the park real quick, that'd be great. And if not, don't worry about it. But the organization that was involved, like the sort of behind the scenes that I was getting tangentially as just being part of like email chains that were going on was unbelievable. The person who was organizing this team was probably the single most organized person I have ever met in my entire life. And I know Lindsay.
So Lindsay.
So
it was not me, but thank you. I appreciate that.
But it was incredible. It was like, okay, here's the question. Here are the individual assignments broken down to individual people based on skill sets and location.
Right.
Because a lot of it's like, what's the engraving on the monument at this place, at this time, in this location? And it's like that information is not on the internet. But Nick's in D.C. Nick, can you go down to the James Monroe Memorial down in you know, off of GW Parkway and tell us what the fourth word of the engraving is?
It's like National Treasure. Yeah.
Say it reminds me of like part scavenger hunt, part trivia. So to go back to your original question as to how long this takes, Michael, I don't know what you're thinking, but I would imagine that this is a full day commitment if you have to go and physically find something that's not prevalent on the internet. Like, I'm thinking 8 hours. Like, I'm thinking you're in and it's a full day.
So I'm on your logic train, except the thing that caught my attention was that teams do this in shifts.
Oh, okay.
And seeing as it's a radio station, I'm going to guess 24 hours. It's a 24-hour continuous trivia competition, runs for a full midnight to midnight, or however it is, 9 to 9, however done. I'm saying 24 hours.
I love that.
So I didn't pay enough attention to figure out exactly how long it is, but I know how long it isn't.
Okay. You know how long it isn't?
Yeah. And here's the thing. A 24-hour trivia, like, scavenger hunt thing, people would power through that, right? You don't have to work that in shifts, right?
Okay.
You can make that, like, Michael, if we were to start a trivia thing right now, you could make it 24 hours doing nothing but research and trivia and back and forth, especially if we're doing it like this. Like, you have somebody to keep your company, you have somebody to keep the conversation going. Hold on, I'm going to go make coffee, I'm going to go grab a shower real quick, and I'll be right back, and the rest of us keep talking while you're doing that. And like, you can make it a day.
It depends on who I'm spending that day with.
That's very true.
The layover test is huge.
If you had to, say, be locked into a house with Joey for a couple of months, that would be a big, a hard pass, right?
It's a newlywed bliss over here.
So, but yeah, I think it's just over 2 days is how long it is. It's 2 full days because they do it over the weekend. They start on like a Friday, in the evening, and they end on Sunday night.
That's so if you were to quantify that in hours, how many hours?
50 hours.
48 hours.
Well, yeah. I think it starts at like 6 o'clock on Friday and ends at like 8 o'clock on Sunday. So it's like 50 hours.
So is that your final answer?
My guess is 50 hours.
All right. Well, you were the closest. It is 54 hours long. It is a 54-hour marathon game. The structure, as I understand it, is about 8 questions an hour because it is a radio program. So they're slipping them in between whatever other content they have going on for the hour. But yeah, and if you just look up some of the ways that, again, this is nearly 50 years old. I think this is the 49th year, if I looked at it correctly. Some of the ways that people did this before the internet, the collections of DVDs and CDs and VHS tapes and TV guides and all sorts of odd things, because looking up trivia before the internet, good luck, you know? So yeah, I just thought that was kind of a fascinating detail. So.
54 hours, wow. That's a lot. I did a 4800, it was called the 4800 video competition, where it went, you know, Thursday afternoon to Sunday back in high school. And that was super, super challenging, just to try to stay awake and rotating through who was getting the shots and how we were going to write the script. And then, of course, editing. And, you know, I have these distinct memories of like rushing to turn in the mini DV tape to the to the coordinator in time. And so I know how exhausting that was, and I can only imagine searching for trivia answers in that chunk of time. Whew. Oh boy.
That would be crazy.
Yeah. That being said, when is this thing? I can never remember what time of year it is.
So it's usually springtime. This year it's apparently been rescheduled to October, but yeah. So it's just something that they do every year. So.
Cool. Well, who's got a segue from very long trivia competition to their fact. Nobody? Okay. Well, speaking of things that are long, I want to talk about toilet
phrasing.
Sorry.
We all lost it.
Well, we were talking that today, as we were recording, this was National Horny Day, which I didn't want to bring up on the podcast, but I guess
here
that's
we are.
Where, yes, this is here we are. We don't know either after dark, but yeah, no. So things that are long, I'm talking specifically about toilet paper rolls. I don't know about you guys, but toilet paper has been in the news way more often nowadays than really what it should or has ever been, you know, really since the history of time.
Agreed.
So I wanted to find a toilet paper fact that, you know, you can use to impress your friends or maybe bribe the Harris Teeter worker if there's one toilet paper left and you are in line. I don't know. You got options. So according to toilet paper manufacturer Georgia Specific LLC, these are the guys that make the Quilted Northern and Angel Soft brand. They, you know, got all their data in and they figured out the proper amount of toilet paper needed in the home. So I would like to know how many rolls the average U.S. household uses per year. So to give you a hint, the average U.S. household is 2.6 people. So 2.6 people in the average U.S. household, how many regular rolls of toilet paper do they use per year? And that is my question to you guys.
So, fellas, how many people are currently in your houses?
Four.
Three.
And two in my case. So we're at 2.6-ish somewhere in there.
Yeah.
Currently. So if we do a general calculation.
We're at three. I can
you're
do that
three.
Math. No. I'm at four.
Well,
he's
no,
at
I know
three,
where it exactly.
You're at two.
Right.
His math does check. I got a calculator here.
And that's on the podcast. Well, thanks. It's normally Michael's job to do the math mistakes. Anyway.
thanks for listening.
You're welcome. So just trying to figure out, based on our experience, our anecdotal experience, what have we been working with? So what do you think?
All right. So this week, I've been doing a lot of stuff that I don't normally do and really deep cleaning the entire house because, hey, I do a podcast once a week for 20 minutes with you guys and then I go about my day.
I cleaned our oven on like day three of this quarantine and right. I am very much regretting that oven is like maybe I need to re-clean it, I guess.
you're regretting.
So very clearly, I am the most productive of anybody.
Yeah. Right. Okay. So back to toilet paper, guys.
All right. My point is that I have been doing a lot of specific cleaning that I don't usually do. Right. So I'm the one every week that goes around the house and replaces all the toilet paper and does this. So I actually have a really good understanding of how much toilet paper we are going through this house right now, and what we're going through. Believe it or not. Is about six rolls per week.
Okay.
Oh, wow. I was going to go way under.
That's what we're using here in this house, is about six rolls per week. Now, here's the other piece of this. One of my four is still in diapers, and she's not really using toilet paper.
So we're back to my 2.6 then.
Yeah.
See? Drop the mic on that. Yeah. Exactly.
So I'm saying two rolls per person per week.
Two rolls per person per week.
Okay. So, that's about what I was figuring.
So call it 100 rolls, just to make the math easy. 100 rolls per person is 260 rolls per household per year.
Okay. So Nick's locking in. Michael, what are you guessing?
So I was trying to do my own math as well, and you know how well this usually goes. So I figured one roll per two people per week. So... go to Brian and I'll keep doing math.
Brian, what's your guess?
I'm just going gorilla math, thin slicing, quick off the top of my head, 310 rolls per year.
Okay, 310. Michael, what do you got?
I'm also giving Michael less time to calculate, which is a calculated strategy.
This is now feeling like a bit of an attack.
So Brian, so you're 300 and what did you say?
310.
310.
310.
So you're just under a roll of toilet paper per day.
just because I'm throwing out a number.
So you're at about 0.34, 0.37 rolls per person per day.
I'm still sticking with it. You can keep trying to talk me out of it. I'm going with it.
Okay. I just, honestly, my biggest thing at this point is, A, I'm buying time for Michael, and B, I don't remember what my answer was.
260, Nick.
I'm going to say, I think everybody's a little high. I'm going to say 150.
Okay, so by Price is Right rules, Brian actually wins. So ooh. Again, this is according to Georgia Pacific, the Quilted Northern and Angel Soft Company. They said that the average U.S. household, 2.6 people, uses 409 regular rolls per year. So 409 regular rolls per year. And then using your own calculation, staying at home 24/7 will result in approximately 140% increase versus the average daily use. So they went on to say how many a two-person household would need in 2 weeks. And they understand, you know, that people are, snapping it up. But really, in theory, you should be using a little bit more, but not a lot, a lot more. You're not doubling what. And there's also a, we're going to put it in a link dump, howmuchtoiletpaper.com will calculate for you exactly how much toilet paper you need or how much toilet paper you have and how long you can last. And there's a lot of advanced settings here to tell you exactly what you need and when you should really start panicking. Nice. Or just, you know, get a bidet, I guess. I should have invested in some bidet stocks maybe before all of this. But anyway.
At least Clorox and Purell.
Yeah. That's your answer. 409 rolls per year for the average household. And there's a couple other statistics that are right around that. That, you know, the average person uses 141 regular rolls. And there's a whole big, there's a lot of toilet paper math, people, and I'm done talking about it.
143 rolls, that's half a roll of toilet paper a day.
Well, and it's also regular rolls. Like, you know, if you're getting any sort of premium, large size, et cetera, blah, 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 that's going to reduce the math quite a bit. And that's probably where we're calculating from. So here.
So
regular rolls are the cheapest small ones.
Oh, hang on. I just had to say sorry. I didn't really mean to be a party pooper.
So here's my question.
Welcome back, Lindsay. Yeah.
If everybody's using roughly just under half a roll of toilet paper per day, why is one sheet of toilet paper like a 6x6 sheet?
I don't know.
Where does that measurement come from? These are the questions that I really want to know.
This is the research I did not do because, you know, on one hand, you want to have, if you're a toilet paper manufacturer, you want people to use more toilet paper. So maybe you're making your sheet smaller so people use more in one thing. Maybe.
Right.
I don't know. It's like they make those, the airplane airport bathrooms, you know, have such tiny paper towels and I end up using two instead of just one. You don't know. But this is a conspiracy theory in the toilet paper industry. I don't want to get into because maybe these guys want to sponsor us one day. So anyway. Who's got the segue from toilet paper to your facts? Michael or Nick, you guys are up.
I have one that I can't use on the podcast because we can't tag it explicit.
Oh, yeah.
So what's your fact about Michael?
My fact's about sports.
All right.
So we all miss sports.
You know, a good segue to that, Michael, is that athletes really do need to be fast. And it's a big thing popular within athletics to have a PGP. Or a pregame poop. So is your fact some way segue to that?
You got
to
cut weight somehow.
Yeah.
Not really. Mine actually has to do with the referees on the field. So I'm going to ask kind of a preemptive question.
You also have to be fast in order to keep up with the athletes.
There
they
got to
do a PGP, man.
Yeah. So does anybody know how the referees used to signal the end of a quarter before they went to whistles?
Was it a gun?
It was a gun.
Yeah.
Starter's pistol to end each quarter.
Yeah. Yep.
So my question specifically is, when did the NFL discontinue this practice?
The NFL?
The NFL.
Interesting.
Okay, I feel like there would be one like lone holdout team, right? Like Dallas is just gonna like if you're reffing in Dallas, you know you're gonna be using the gun to signal.
Well,
the rest of the league like adopted whistles, you know?
I can tell you why it went from the gun to the whistle. I don't think it'll help you guys at all, but I think I can tell you.
Okay.
Which essentially was up until a certain point. Time was still kept on the field. So if you were watching the television broadcast, sometimes those clocks wouldn't sync up.
Right.
So the gun on the field was because the time was kept on the field and not up in the booth.
Right.
Interesting.
Cool. Well, I'm going to blindly throw out a number, and that's 1973.
Okay.
Okay. Why 1973?
I just feel like it was a year that a lot of things happened, you know? NFL really got, you know, started in, what, the 60s? So, you know, you give it 10 years or so. I think the first NFL championship was 1960. And so, you know, you give it 10 years, a decade, that's time.
Okay.
All right. That's pretty good logic.
Thank you, Michael.
Sure. I also have what I consider to be very good logic. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
So I remember right around the time I was graduating from high school is when they opened up Raymond James Stadium in Tampa. And I think that at some point they said, well, if we're going to have a cannon, we don't need the pistols anymore. So I'm going to say 1997, they replaced the pistols at Raymond James Stadium with the cannon in the pirate ship in the Tampa Bay Buccaneers Stadium. And that's when they did away with it.
Can I also issue a very quick correction here? Because I don't want to get another angry email. Actually, it wasn't angry. It was very nice. Hey, Bill, you're great for pointing out all of the things we did wrong. And I appreciate you. And I know that sounds sarcastic, but it is actually sincere. I did enjoy talking to you. But so the NFL championships started in 1933. Uh-huh. I was letting my personal bias show because in 1960, the Philadelphia Eagles defeated the Green Bay Packers in the NFL championship. And in my head, that was the first NFL championship. But it was the Green Bay Packers of Vince Lombardi's reign. And the Eagles were the only team to beat Vince Lombardi in the playoffs. So bonus fun fact, but just proving how wrong I was.
It was also until recently the last time that the Eagles had won a championship.
Yeah.
What's that feel like? As a Chargers fan, I don't know what an NFL championship feels like.
Yeah, so, yeah, it was, you know, winning is the most fun, I always say, about all sports and every sport. But the first Super Bowl was played, what, 1967?
67.
So 5 years was my guess. I'm still sticking to 1973. Brian, what's your guess?
I'm going with, because he mentioned something about the syncing up with television, et cetera, I'm going with 1965.
Oh, okay.
And the reason I'm going with 1965 is just trying to take guns off of television for whatever reason, because of perhaps what might have been happening with wartime television broadcasts in the 60s. That's my logic.
They just didn't want to have a gun shown on television.
Yeah, and or gun sounds when there were already crazy video clips coming in from television that were upsetting people. So
okay.
Random thought.
Okay, well, Brian, I got to tell you this. 1965 was a pretty good guess because that was the first time that the NFL expanded to a six-man refereeing crew. So the gun really did come off of the field because the line judge took over the timing, who was off the field. However, the NFL continued the practice up until 1994.
Wow.
So we'll obviously drop this link into the link dump, but it's from the 1993, one of the 1993 playoff games. I believe it might be a division championship, but I could be wrong. But at the end of the half, you can see the referee pulling the gun out of his pocket to signal the end of the quarter.
Wow. Ooh,
crazy.
Who knew? So what was the correct answer, Michael?
1994.
1994. Whoa, I was very wrong, but that is tradition. So, Nick, what's your segue here?
So speaking of 1994,
right?
A couple of months ago, and by a couple of months ago, I mean like 18 or 20 or 30 or whatever it was.
I was gonna say 2 days ago.
Yeah. What was the one of the funniest memes I've seen recently is that 2020 is a unique leap year in that February has 29 days, March has 3 months, and April has 5 years.
Yep.
So, a bunch of episodes ago, we actually looked it up beforehand. It was episode like 220-something of the We Don't Know Either podcast. Your friend Sam was on the show.
Yeah, she's incredible.
And her interesting fact was about the woman who had birthed the most children.
Yeah.
Okay, and it was Mrs. Valentina Valis, Russian name, who had 69 children during her lifetime.
A lot of kids.
So I recently saw that fact again and remembered the episode with Sam on it and remembered that we had asked the question of the reverse, but we never actually gave the answer. So my interesting fact is about the monarch of Monaco. His name is Moulay Ismail Ibn Sharif. And he holds the record for the most children fathered.
Oh boy, that's all a different number.
So yes, the most children birthed by a woman is 69. What is the record for the most children fathered?
Oh boy.
I have one question. Is he still alive?
He is not still alive.
Okay.
He's very tired. He's worked hard.
Yeah, he lived sometime in the 17th century, at the turn of the 17th century.
Got it. Okay.
So he's been gone for a while. It may be too soon, but he will be missed. Or not. I don't know anything about him. He may have been a brutal dictator.
How did they know that they were fathered by him? Like, how many moms are we talking?
So he had a harem of 500 women.
A harem, okay.
A harem, yes. And there are a number of births registered to him as actually being the father. So there is an official registered number, and then there is the observation, like what they assume is the actual number. I will take either.
Okay, I'm going to go with...
And you know what? I'm going to give you a range.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
I'm going to give you give or take one. No. I'll do give or take 20.
Give or take 20. Wow. Okay. So if you have a harem of 500 women, you got to figure how many times each of them were pregnant. And also, I don't know what this man's stamina is. If he has sex one time a day, 365 days, but what's the percentage of
successful pregnancies? Yeah. How many were she trying to get pregnant versus how many were accidents?
And over how many years?
Yeah, and over how many years? I mean, dudes can swim for a long, long time.
That's why I asked if he was still alive.
Happy National, what do we say the day was?
Horny day.
Yeah, geez Louise. Okay, I'm going to throw out 1,800 because I feel just good about that number. I think it's more than three. I think each of those women, 500 times three, and each of them probably had a couple extras. So yeah, 1,800 is my guess.
Okay, 1,800 for Lindsay. Brian.
I want to say, I dispute whether or not this is official, but it is what it is. Like, I was thinking you were going to go with an entirely different super famous historical figure because Genghis Khan has been thrown around in this sort of context, but neither here nor there. With this official count, I would say I want to go with 2,100 with no calculation whatsoever.
Okay,
I'm just going to throw that number out.
Sure, and you know what's funny is the article I was reading that brought up this statistic did give an honorable mention to Genghis Khan, who is believed to have upwards of 16 million living male descendants.
Wow. Right.
So, that's a lot.
Yeah.
All right, Michael.
Okay, so I'm trying to think about this. You figure, unless you're trying to have kids that many times, I don't think you're going to get to the numbers that you guys think. I think a harem of 500 William also doesn't get built overnight.
That's something that requires time.
Exactly. So there's a bit of an exponential kind of probability, for right. the lack of a better term.
If you're building a harem, it takes time to erect it, right?
Exactly.
If we needed a secret phrase. Lord. Anyway.
Lindsay, this is how it feels when you do that.
I don't know. Mine's just not as, it's just not as stiff. You know, mine's kind of like a little bit more natural in terms of puns. So I just, you know, I just feel like I know that you're better than that.
Yeah, I'm not.
Okay, Michael, what's your guess?
Lindsay, it's so hard to make these kinds of puns.
Michael's just rolling his eyes. That's the nice thing about video chats. I can see everybody's eye rolls more distinctly, which is really great. But we're running out of time. So, Michael, what's your deal?
I'm going to say 900.
900, all right.
Yeah.
900.
I'm going to say max of two per.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm going to say 900.
All right. Well, the number of registered births that they had was 525 boys and 342 girls, bringing the total up to 867 registered births. However, in observation, after the last assumed child was born, that number ballooned to 1,171 observed births of this man.
Whoa.
So, yeah, the record for a woman giving birth is 69. The record for a man is 1,171.
Whoa. I also just, back in those times, they couldn't have, like, traveled really that far, you know, like, it just took a really long time to get anywhere. So I am just very concerned with the amount of people that could have been on a Mari episode and they didn't know that it was their brother. Just statistically speaking, in that small of a town, you might have some issues there,
yeah.
You know?
So, and the other thing to keep in mind here is that this guy's at 1171, right? He's like the Michael Jordan or the, you know, Wilt Chamberlain of sleeping with people. Wait a minute.
Antonio Cromartie.
Yeah. So he's at 867. Number two is around 300. And there are only about 15 over 100 on the list altogether.
Whoa.
So it's a very unique club.
This is Game of Thrones, Walder Frey. Anyway, moving on.
Okay, guys. Well, we actually have to wrap it up. So everybody, thanks for listening. I don't know what our secret phrase was. Party pooper, that's fine. Use it for your bonus points in whatever place that you're playing virtually, I guess. But there's a secret phrase just to keep us with tradition. But this has been the We Don't Know Either podcast. I'm Lindsay.
I'm Nick.
I'm Michael.
And I'm Brian.
And we don't know either.
Bye.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.